The question was asked, how do we understand that people receive money for learning Torah, for teaching Torah, for being rabbis of community? The answers are not identical, but they're similar enough that we'll deal with it as though it's all one question, meaning there's room to discern between a rabbi, a teacher of Torah, and someone who's a judge. Really, each one has their own halachic parameters a little bit, and there are differences. But being that we're not going into it now, we'll just deal with the general idea. Technically, the Talmud tells us that when God gave over the Torah to Moshe, he gave it for free. And God said, "Mani b'chinam, af ata b'chinam. I taught you for free, Moshe. From now on, you teach for free. Don't take money for teaching Torah." So technically, that's the way it should work. You want to learn Torah, you don't pay. And the halacha even says, even if you had to pay to learn Torah, let's say you couldn't get it for free. But when you teach, you got to teach for free. So at first glance, that seems to be the way it should be. At the same time, we say that certain levels of teaching, you are supposed to pay for. You want someone to teach your child Aleph Beis, someone's going to take off from his job and learn with him Aleph Beis, you should pay for that. Judging a court case technically should be for free, but you know, a person, he's a computer programmer. He's making 1,000 shekel an hour. You want him to take off from his work, to take time to answer your halachic questions and judge your cases. So the Talmud already quotes, I think it was Rechava, I don't remember, it was an unusual name, one of the Amoraim, who when they'd come to him and ask him to judge a case, he'd say, "Look, I have a job. If you want to cover the cost of the time I have to take off from my job to judge you, you could do that, fine, I'll judge you. You don't want to, so then I can't do it right now. I have to do my job, I have to support my family." So one of the concepts we apply is that we pay schar batala. We pay a person what he would otherwise make. Many people have other jobs which they could do and they would do, but they're taking off from that to do this. So when it comes to teaching like the Aleph Beis, teaching basic things, so that we say you're paying him like a kindergartner. He's watching the kids, they shouldn't kill one another, and he's taking off time to do it, so you're paying him for watching the kids, you're not really paying him for the Torah. At later times, one of the things we might rely on is that this teaching of the Talmud that we say, you know, the guy otherwise he'd be doing something else. You're covering his losses, really. You're not really paying him a salary as much as you're covering his losses. Sometimes, if the community gets together and says, we want to have someone here, and it's worthwhile for us to have someone here who's going to take care of us and teach us and make sure we have a kosher mikveh and kosher food, etc. So the community pulls together funds, which they have ready for a rabbi, and that's also okay. Sometimes a person says, you know, I want to fund someone else who's learning Torah, so I merit for part of his Torah. It's brought in the Gemara that there were rabbis who their brothers funded them, and they're quoted in the Mishnah. The Mishnah quotes them as brothers. It doesn't only quote the one who learned Torah. It says, he, the brother of him. Meaning it gives both of them the honor of being mentioned in the Mishnah. And that's something which is also quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. And the Rambam did this. The same Rambam that goes out, as we learned in the Rambam and Pirkei Avos, the same Rambam that goes out headstrong against all the rabbis or heads of communities or teachers who demand a paycheck. The Rambam is speaking about those who demand a paycheck. So he himself used to be funded by his brother. His brother used to do a deal with him. Like the Talmud tells us, Yisachar and Zvulun had this deal. Zvulun would do business and learn when he had time. Yisachar was learning Torah all day, and they made a deal, and this deal is quoted in Halacha, that you could make a deal with someone where they learn Torah, and you work, and you split the merits in the world to come, and you also split the profits, where they make along with what you make, and then you merit a certain portion in the world to come. There are even documents that we have that you can make such a deal with someone. And in the laws of learning Torah, it says, even though every one of us must learn Torah, if you see you're working and you're not getting to learn as much as you should, so first of all, learn more. Secondly, if at any rate you can't do more than what you're doing, what you could do to get more merits of Torah is have this deal with people. And the Rambam also writes this, and the Rambam himself did this with his brother. Now, all that is background, really. At the crux of the matter is that things changed. Up until the point of approximately 800 years ago, you had rabbis who were working on the site. And that was the ideal, you see, in the times of the Mishnah. You know, the rabbis, this one fixed sandals, and this one was a blacksmith, and this one was a doctor. And you see that throughout the period of the Mishnah, they weren't embarrassed of it. Quite the contrary, they'd be embarrassed to accept a penny from anyone else. And that's the ideal. That's for sure the best way, and that's the way it should be. Approximately 800 years ago, the rabbis saw that the rabbis aren't where they used to be. And the rabbi said that we see that the situation changed. And if rabbis are going to divide their time between learning Torah and making a livelihood, they're not going to end up being rabbis. And they're not going to end up knowing Torah. And then the Jewish people won't have leaders. And then they said, even though technically it's not right, technically we wouldn't want a rabbi to accept a penny, just like until that point, rabbis wouldn't accept a penny. But they said, it's not going to last. It's not going to work. So they said, no, from now on, we have to. And this is quoted in a response called the Maharik, who was a Rishon, and it's quoted in the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch, the laws of learning Torah. They reached a point where the rabbis saw, it's just not going to work, we're not going to have Torah. I don't think they had in mind that you'd have tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands like you have today who are learning Torah and being funded by a system. But technically, the fact that it's a system makes it easier halachically. Because really, it's a system. No one's forcing anyone to pay. The Rambam went out against those people who would come to the community and say, well, you want me to teach you, you guys have to pay. The Rambam said, you can't twist the people's arm and say, pay me so that I can teach you Torah. That not. But that's not the situation today. The situation today is there are many yeshivas and they have fundraisers and there are people who are happy to fund them. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. If you think about what's happening in Mechon Meir, for example, the tuition that guys are paying doesn't cover costs. Just figure, I mean, what the Mechon's budget is for food, electric, insurance, just the taxes they pay on this building. You're talking about the expenses here are in the millions, the expenses for running the Mechon. And the tuition doesn't really cover it. It's not the Mechon lives off of the donations and the people want to sponsor and dedicate shurman, all kinds of things. But at the end of the day, the fact that a student pays tuition, I think, is legitimate. You know, it's legitimate, A, for the room, to just factor in the room and the food and everything else. And also, at some level, the Mechon is also relying on this, which is that the conclusion that was come to 600 years ago is that if people don't do this, it's not going to work. So, approximately 12, 15 years ago, I was young and very idealistic. So I said, I'm going to work and get this and this job. And on the side, I'll learn Torah and I'll learn and I'll teach and divide the day. And then I went to Rav Shlomo Fisher, who was a judge here in Hanover. And I said to him, look, I learned through Sugya and I don't really think, you know, these are leniencies. Why rely on them at the end of the day? He said to me, why don't you look at Jewish history? You have communities which went this route. You're a descendant of one of them. I'm a Yekke. I come from the German community. The German community always said Torah v'avoda, or in German pronunciation, Torah v'avoda. They always said Torah and work. Balance the two. And he said, if you look at the history of the German community, they never had rabbis. They always had to import rabbis from elsewhere. Rav Hirsch was imported. All their big rabbis were imported. How come they never had rabbis? Because this theory, the conclusion was 600 years ago, is that it doesn't work. That this theory is nice in theory, but our generation, we're not on that level. And he said, if you look at the communities that went by this ideal and said, we're going to learn and work, and we're going to balance the two, they balanced the two, they worked well, and they learned a little bit on the side, but real spiritual leaders they never got. They always had to import from elsewhere, from somewhere else, where they weren't relying on this, where they were relying on the leniency, where they weren't balancing the two. So he said to me, if you want to do the Jewish people a favor, don't think you're going to do them a favor by being one great person who's balancing the two. At the end of the day, there are people today, there is an option, you know, a person who knows how to run, to play the stock market, for example, with 1 hour a day or 2 hours a day. There are options where a person could make a living and learn and teach all day, and there are people who are doing that. There's a rabbi in Tel Aviv who does that. He makes a living on the side. And there are people who do that in many different ways. And it's admirable for those who do it. But what's said in Shulchan Aruch is that of the many people who tried to do it, most don't succeed. Most people who try to balance this, we admire anyone who succeeds, but most people who try to balance it, they end up failing. They end up having a decent parnasa, but not being big in Torah. They don't succeed in getting where they should in Torah. And at the end of the day, the question is, what's been gained and what's been lost? If the conclusion has been reached 600 years ago that in order for us to have spiritual giants, we have to rely on this leniency or however you'll call it. So then the question is, did we really gain? If 9 out of 10 people who try this don't succeed, so then we're losing 9 out of 10 rabbis or leaders that we could have. And again, you could factor in all the other points we said, why in today's day and age, it's easier than it used to be. You know, it's not that anyone's demanding and saying, pay me so I'll teach you Torah. That's not the case. So there's more to rely on.
But there are rabbis that are doing that.
Well, there are rabbis who are saying, you know, I'm here for the community. I didn't take other jobs which I could have taken. I didn't do other things which I could do to support my family. And I'm here for the community. And the deal is that if you want me here for the community, you have to cover my expenses. You know, a person has to live from something. Innately, everyone hates the idea of paying for Torah. Because innately, every one of us feels a connection to Torah. And we want to have it without having to pay for it. You don't mind paying for a course in astronomy. You don't mind paying for a course in botany. You don't mind paying for any other course. But when it comes to Torah, no one wants to pay. And I think the reason behind it is because we all feel connected. And we feel like we want the one teaching it to be so connected and so wanting to teach that money shouldn't even enter the picture. And I once had a philanthropist come to me about 2 years ago. And he said he's looking for someone to teach him X, Y, or Z. So I said, I could find you someone, but you know, people have to live. If I'm going to find you a private tutor, you're going to have to pay by the hour. So he said to me, pay for someone to teach me Torah? I said, look, the guy is otherwise learning his own thing. I can find you someone, but you want me to find someone to volunteer to take off an hour from his life to teach you? Maybe, maybe not. And I understand why, you know, and this guy had no shortage of money. But for anything else, people are willing to pay. For Torah, people feel more connected. And they feel badly, and I think it's right that they feel badly. You see, the ideal of Torah is that you don't pay to learn Torah. There is such an ideal. There is. But at the end of the day, being that we're in a generation where if we're not going to balance it, you're not going to have who to teach. You know, it's that simple. And even so, you have to remember that a person who's accepting a salary, what kind of salary is he getting? You know, just now, last night, someone told me about a guy who commissions art, and he's this big art dealer. And they, you know, every painting in his house is worth $100,000. And he works, he has 60, 70 guests every Shabbos, and he works teaching Torah. So on the side, he's doing art. Like, on the side, he's making a nice living. You can imagine that if he, you know, he has no financial problem. Most people are not like that. Most people are giving up something like that or something else in order to learn and teach Torah. And at the end of the day, they're not living a lifestyle which is comfortable financially. A person who has taken time to learn and teach Torah, what's the best he's making? Nowhere near a normal salary. It's not a...
50 euro an hour?
I don't think anywhere near that.
I know people pay that.
Okay, fine.
50 euro an hour.
I could tell you that here in Merkaz Arav, you have big, big, big Talmidei Chachamim. And if you wanted to hire one of them to learn with you for an hour during the day, so you'd pay anywhere between 35 and 40 shekel an hour. And those are big people, yeah. They're not charging a huge amount, and at the end of the day, you know, they also have to put food on the table, and they're also they're taking off, they're not doing other things in order to learn and teach. It's natural that people don't like it, because we all want the Torah for free. While we'd be willing to pay for other things, for the Torah, we're more inclined to want something that's more pure, where money doesn't enter the picture, and that's legitimate. But at the end of the day, you know, they also have to live. They kill themselves day and night. I can tell you there are people there who at the end of the meals, they collect the little scraps of bread that are left on the table. Because that's what they're going to bring home for their family. I can tell you a lot of stories, people there today, not stories of sages from years ago. There are people there who will go to the shuk at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night and go to the dumpsters and take out the half-rotten apples and tomatoes and slice off the rotten part and take the parts that aren't rotten, and that's how they get free fruits and vegetables for their family. So there are people who are doing things, and it's not people who couldn't do something else. It's people who are very talented and very smart, but very dedicated. At the end of the day, when, you know, whatever stipend they're getting, they're not living anywhere near a normal lifestyle. There was a student there who put out maybe 5 or 6 books. I mean, he's a rabbi. And at one point, I visited his house, and I see the house is freezing, and the kids are in 3 layers of sweaters. And I said, you know, your kids are cold. We need better heating. But he wouldn't take any charity. He had to figure out a different way of making it hotter. I mean, he figured out a way, and then but he wouldn't take a penny. So I don't know, the rabbis held it against him. The rabbis held he went too far. He should have accepted. People wanted to chip in with his learning. He said no. He said no. And there are many stories. But at the end of the day, the halachic basis, the halachic framework is what we discussed earlier.
Is it possible that the kids, one day they might say, because of Torah, my father, I live a poor life, and therefore I don't want Torah like that?
It is. It's definitely possible. There are kids who say that. And that's something a parent has to factor in. Right, that's part of the chinuch parent has to factor in. He told me that he was offered a bigger apartment by the government. And he agreed because he felt like at the Shabbos table, when I was a guest in their house, you have to figure the room was about the length of that table, it dropped longer, and the width of from you to me, like to here, and he had maybe 11 kids. So they're sitting all squished at the Shabbos table. And then he told me, he shared with me, I mean, we're friends, he shared with me that the reason he agreed to accept this bigger apartment was because they were sitting at this Shabbos table, and one of his sons said, this isn't the Shabbos meal if I have to sit like this. If I can't even sit normal at a Shabbos table, this isn't the Shabbos meal. When he heard that, he said, okay, if that's how they feel, so then I have to agree to move to a bigger apartment.
Same guy,
yeah. So I think he might have gone too far. Him and that. I'm not the only one who thinks that. What?
He probably realized that he had.
Right, but the trick is to realize before you go too far, not after. Okay. But you have to remember that 100 years ago, a lot of people lived this way. You just have to be up with the times. It's not that what he did is ridiculous. It's that being that his kids are seeing other ways of life, like Batal pointed out, you don't want your kids walking away saying, no way I'm going to do this. You want them to be happy with the way of life, but a lot of it is the attitude of the husband and wife to what they're doing. And a lot of it is a question of what you relate to your kids. If you keep saying, gee, I wish we could have steak twice a week. I wish, if you keep relaying to them, we'd get you a bike, but right now we can't afford it. Or if that's the message you're relaying, then they get one picture. In that home, the message they were getting was, look at how great it is. We get to put out all these farm for Am Yisrael all over the world. People learn this man's farm because he doesn't make a penny on them. He sells a sefer that's this thick for 20 shekel. I mean, he all his farm are like big fat farm, and his farm he sells it at cost. He's not willing to make a penny off his farm. And the product is that all over the world, people are learning the works that he wrote, and he hasn't made a penny off it.
What is this?
I don't know if I should say. I could tell you that the next generation is already out there. His children are married, and he did a good job because they're doing the same thing. They didn't walk away saying, I'm not doing this. Quite the contrary. His children are fine, Talmidei Chacham. So I guess he did something right, in spite of all that. We don't view it the way his kids view it. But I know his kids. They're married, or some of them are married already. And that's the direction there.
Let's just finish. It means that the moral...